What's your story? This is Success Stories with Kendra Hall, where inspirational people come to tell their story so that you can write your own. Here's Kendra.
If you have ever had the thought that maybe what we need is a little bit more good in the world, a little more positivity, and wondered how exactly to make that happen, my next guest talks about it. Now, he's not going to give you a three-step plan, but through the stories he shares, it's pretty clear how each of us finding and then living our best selves can create the positive change the world needs right now. Today's guest is Michael Jai White, an actor, martial artist, screenwriter, and director that you may recognize from his work in hits like The Dark Knight, Tyson, and Why Did I Get Married? A modern-day man of all trades, White's newest venture has taken him back to his home community in Connecticut to launch the state's first mini-major film studio, Gigantic Studios, Studio One, this summer. Michael, welcome to Success. I am so excited to hear your stories.
Well, thanks for having me.
Okay, so just for context, because I feel like it's always helpful, you are not on the East Coast right now. You are in Sherman Oaks, California. Is that right?
Yes, I am. Yeah, for another week.
So you're doing the bi-coastal thing,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah.
So in addition to the big studio, are you doing work in L.A. and Hollywood as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I just finished a movie in Illinois about 5 days ago. So, you know, I'm bouncing around. So on days off, I'm going to Connecticut and you know, kind of like kissing babies and juggling and things like that. Just doing studio business.
So, I love that. Yeah. I love that on days off, you go to the company you started. That doesn't sound like a day off to me, but I understand how that goes. So, Michael, I want to start kind of at the very beginning. I know that, you know, you're an actor. You've heard in the introduction lots of great projects to your name. What was your, and I always find, I'm just fascinated by actors and actresses, because it's one of those things that I think people say, oh, I want to be an actor, an actress when I grow up. And it's this dream that people have that so few actually accomplish or make happen. So, and I find that each person who does, their story is completely different. So how did you end up doing this?
Well, I know I have a different story. I've been on my own since I was 14. I didn't know I wanted to be an actor. Had I had, you know, other insight, I was doing stuff like that my entire life. I was put on puppet shows when I was in third and fourth grade. I'd create my own kind of stories, and I was shooting my own films with Super 8 camera,
yes,
when I was 10. But I never really thought that it was something that I would take serious, because, you know, as you get older, you gotta take jobs that, you know, make money and all that type of stuff. And so it's just that the, you know, left and right brain is, you know, I'm like, I want something tangible. I didn't know any actors,
right?
So you know, I was teaching school. I was a school teacher, but still on my time off, I'd always go out for commercials and other acting work. Just because it was something that I was interested in, right? So, I mean, all throughout college, I do theater courses and everything else, because I just almost felt like that was like my little vacation.
Wow.
Yeah, so I wasn't taking it serious as this is a thing to do for your livelihood, you know?
Wow.
Because, I mean, all the actors I knew had blue hair and had, you know, they were like, you know, please pay attention to me type folks, right? Very extroverted people. And I'm like, I don't identify with that. So I didn't think I had what it took. I thought there was just something that, you know, that you had to have that kind of thing.
Wow. Maybe that ended up being an advantage, because you were just doing it because you loved it, not because you were expecting something out of it. And I feel like that's a much better energy to put out into the world if you're, you know, then what can I get from this?
And I was I was a student of humanity tremendously. Like I said, I've been on my own since I was 14. So I knew every type of person out there. I had friends with people who, I mean, actually, I remember when my 16th birthday, I had to, tried to have a birthday party, and it looked like they're on the cusp of war, because I had so many factions that, like, 6 to 8 factions of people who would have nothing to do with each other if not for me. Like, friends going, well, how do you know those people? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? But that's who I was. And that's my strength as a filmmaker, is because I just think I've always seen things from all kinds of perspectives. I've never come from just one marginalized, like, way of looking at things.
So tell me, you've mentioned it a couple of times, being on your own at 14. I think maybe we should start even earlier. What is life on your own at 14 like?
Well, I grew very fast. I was very, very, I mean, I grew up in a tough environment. I was originally from Brooklyn. Mm. And I kind of built armor early on. I was... Mm. I was the size of a grown man at 13. You know, I really haven't grown since, like, maybe an inch since I was 13. And I was quite big, had this voice as well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So it was like people thought I was a lot older, and I behaved like I was a lot older. All of my friends were, you know, way older than me. Mm. And so I was having problems with, you know, I don't know, authority and all kinds of stuff. And so I was just out there, you know. And so luckily, I mean, the few seeds got planted at the right time, and it turned my life around, and I realized that, you know, I wanted a different life for myself.
Yep.
And yep. And I knew education was going to provide me that.
So you went to, you were in college, but not for theater. You took theater classes, and then you became a teacher. You were a teacher for a couple years, is that right?
Yeah, like 3 years, yeah.
And then going on auditions for commercials, when was your first, you know, it sounds cliche, but the first big break? Like, when did you get the call or have that sense that, oh, wait, maybe I am the kind of person. Maybe I don't have to be the, you know, super extroverted me. Maybe who I am is able to do this as a career.
Yeah, my first real break that took me from teaching, when I found out I was going to be a dad, I basically said, look, I got to take these things serious. I was about to leave teaching. I was about to become a cop.
Wow.
You know, because I wanted to be able to work overtime and, you know, and stack as much money as I can, because I knew at that time I eventually wanted to have enough money banked up so I can pursue the acting. And give it a good shot for it, and maybe take a leave of absence from the police force, and then, you know, have that as something to stabilize me should I, you know, should the acting not work. That was the idea. But right before, like 2 days before I was due to go to the academy, I booked a major off-Broadway play. It was To Kill a Mockingbird.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a lead as Tom Robinson in To Kill a Mockingbird with major, like, Tony Award winners, George Grizzard, Catherine Hooten, like huge people. And I was no one.
That was your first thing.
That was my first major thing that told me maybe I'm doing the right thing, because the people I had to, you know, kind of beat out for that role were really established in Broadway. And so that said, hey, Mike, I think you're doing the right thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's what led me to leave, you know, the police or and teaching and pursue the acting.
So let me ask you this, because I mean, this is all audio, so no one can see you. But like, you're a big guy, like, you're tough, you're strong. I can see all of that. Tell me though, when you went into that first rehearsal or the read through or whatever that first thing is when you sit down with the rest of the cast and you're looking around at these other incredible actors, Broadway, you know, legends. Was there a part of you that was nervous? Like, we hear a lot about imposter syndrome, thinking like, maybe I don't belong here. I don't know if I can. Did you see the people around you and their experience in this being like your first big break? And were you intimidated by it? Or were you just automatically like, all right, let's do this. Do you remember that first day?
I must have a missing chip, but that never occurred to me.
Oh, gosh.
Never have I ever been intimidated.
Yeah.
In acting and even since then, I mean, my first real big break for in movies was the Mike Tyson story, and I was playing, you know, opposite George C. Scott, and I never could wrap my head around being intimidated, because I go, wait a minute, since he's a great actor, I have to work less because he's so believable. Like, this is a confidence booster, you know? So I wouldn't.
I need to know more about this, because whatever chip you dropped and lost to somewhere, I'm pretty sure I picked up, and I'm like, oh gosh, I should be worried that I'm even talking to you, right? I should be intimidated. So your thought is, you see these great people, you're sitting with them. So that should be a confidence booster, not a confidence inhibitor.
Yeah. I mean, probably because, you know what, my heroes were never actors. Mm. My heroes were just people I thought were good people who were selfless and did things for others. I mean, those have always been those are always the top of the list to me as far as human beings are concerned. Mm-hmm. And so somebody who is a good actor, it's a great skill. It's like somebody who plays basketball, but I'm like, it's a game. It's mm-hmm. great. They're good at it. But what does that mean? You know, I don't know. I never got the intimidating thing.
Interesting.
I never quite understood it. That's why. To this day, I don't understand when people make a big deal about me. Because every day I live, I don't remember I'm an actor.
Right.
But it's I don't know. Because I just in reality, my belief is the best actors on this planet, we don't know who they are, and we'll never know who they are. Mm. You know, every actor that you know is they're by way of other things as not just acting. Mm. You know, they have to have a look.
Yeah, yeah.
They have to have it's like I wouldn't be here if I didn't look a certain way as well. You know, so I can't think of, oh, this guy's a best actor. This is the, you know, it's like, well, you know, if it wasn't. I mean, Meryl Streep is the best human being actor I've ever heard of, you know, but if she didn't look like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, she's
yeah.
great. She has a look that she can look like so many people, which right. is amazing.
Which is a skill in and of itself. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's certain structure that mm-hmm. her face is, she's born with, that makes it even easier for her to meld into different characters.
Yeah.
But if she didn't look that way, I mean, she happens to have a look that, you know, is up there with her talent.
Yeah.
But it's like, if she didn't look that way, would you ever know who she was? It's kind of a trip. So I just look at it like that, and I go, oh, yeah, that's great. Somebody's the best basketball player in the world. Well, they're pretty tested against the best basketball players.
You know,
so, you know, they may have bragging rights with their abilities are tested, but still, it's a game. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mm-hmm. mean you're better than someone. And so, with actors and the whole acting pool, yeah, you may have skill, but a large part of that has to do with some other things that you're not in control of. So I never thought of it as a reason to be cocky, you know?
Yeah. I think it's such a, when you were, as I'm listening to you, there were a few things that you said that I feel like I could take, or anyone listening could take, and bring into that next situation where maybe they aren't missing your the intimidation chip like you are. And so where they're feeling intimidated. And one of the things you said was that your biggest heroes, the people you admire most, were the people who do great work as humans, not necessarily professionally, but those who are involved in the community. I'm thinking of all the things that might add up to. And what an interesting strategy then. The next time that you're walking into a room or a situation where someone is feeling intimidated, to remember, because of the people who are going to be in there, remember all of the other people who you truly admire, the people that you know in your life and what you admire them for, that maybe aren't just what they do at work. That could be a really great, you know, a little backdoor around feeling like an imposter in a room. And then the other thing that really stood out to me is when you said, we will, in many cases, never know the best actors. And to know that, you know, anytime you feel that sense of intimidation, to know that even the people around you who are so excellent, there's many others who are equally as good. And maybe it takes some of the pressure off the ones that you're looking at right now. Now, I know, Michael, you probably don't understand any of this because you don't have the intimidation chip in you. But that was really, for someone who just has never felt that way, talking to someone who often feels that way, and listeners who often feel that way, there were a few things in there that I think could be really, really useful. So thank you for that. That'll help me.
Well, thank you.
You did it. You did it. So what are some of the favorite, like, what is your favorite part? And of course, we want to talk about the new studio that you're opening. I want to hear the thought and the hope behind that. But since we are here talking about acting, what are your favorite parts about acting? What do you love about it? Something that maybe from the outside, someone wouldn't expect.
Well, I mean, I think it informs people about humanity that they would never, about humanity they never encounter, you know? It's a really big teacher. Mm. And I think the responsibility of an actor is to recreate humanity honestly, you know? Because you're really informing a lot of people's, and a lot of people's judgment come from what they've seen depicted on film and television.
You're right. Yep, you're right.
And so I think it's quite powerful when done right, you know? So it's... even though, you know, it's entertainment or whatever, but it goes really beyond that.
Does that belief inform the projects that you say yes or no to, knowing that so much of our lives are informed by what we see on television or in the movies? Do you take then your roles seriously?
Yeah, I mean, everything is everything, you know, is every project's different. But not, like, as far as taking on things for the company, what you know, our goal is, I want to do things. And I believe that you can entertain folks and you could teach without necessarily a soapbox. I think there's some of the most effective ways of teaching are in nuance, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not that whole look at me, look how smart I am type of thing. I never think that that's the greatest way of teaching. I like teaching someone and they don't know they've been taught till later, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what's interesting to me, you know, to create entertainment that ticks several boxes.
What are some of the projects that you've worked on that you felt like have been real teaching moments?
Well, you know, there's a number of things that I've directed, written, and I write under a pseudonym a lot of times. and because, you know, I always like honesty. So if someone does not know who wrote it, you know, they're going to be completely impartial, you know, unbiased. So even if it's, I've given scripts to my manager and put, you know, wrote a female pseudonym over it. And if he, you know, likes it, it's like, hey, where did this come from? And I'm like, you know, I don't lie. I try to find ways to say things because, you know, what it is, I just want the honest truth. People are biased sometimes. Mm-hmm. If you like me, you might tend to give me the benefit of the doubt when you're reading something that I've written. So, mm-hmm. I don't want that. That doesn't do me any good.
Yeah.
I just want the honest truth. So, you know, that's why, you know, I kind of do things that way. And being a parent and a teacher, I just know that there's ways that you can reach people effectively. It's not you saying, oh, wow, you know, look at this message. I made my point very creatively. It's not about your success in making the point or showing somebody, you know, kind of one-upping or showing somebody something. It's the effect you've given them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in nuance, but sometimes people get held up in making their point. But if the point that you're making is not having the desired effect of that individual, then what's the point? Then that's kind of self-aggrandizing. That's just kind of feeding your ego. Mm-hmm. But it's about being effective. And so I think the best movie making is doing something effective and not just saying, look how smart I am. You know?
Yeah. When you write, I can't even imagine writing a screenplay or writing a piece that would appear on film or on stage. You've done several, like you've mm-hmm. written several things. Like what does that, where does the idea come from? What does that writing even look like? Like what is your process when you're writing something?
Well, I mean, there's that term, write what you know.
Yeah.
And so I think I've traversed a life that not many people have experienced in my industry. Some of the things that, you know, I at one time lived a life that, you know, you see just in action movies. You know, there's like things that were just commonplace that would make, there's so many movies that's in my life that you wouldn't even believe,
right?
You know, growing up. And I could bring the honest glimpse into those things, the nuance that other people who didn't have to survive what I survived, to bring to the forefront. And there's a lot of stories that could be told and just humanity, how I've experienced it. So, I mean, really, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't have a specific, message, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think what's benefited me is that I've always never looked at life from one prism, you know? And I've never marginalized myself. So what has come out of me via writing and producing and has excited quite a few, and it continues to. I've got some pretty exciting projects coming up.
Can you tell us about any of them, or are they secret?
Well, one of them is going to be coming out not too long from now, hopefully. One of them is called The Outlaw Johnny Black. It's a It's a faith-based action Western romantic comedy drama.
All in one.
It's equal parts of each. And so it's funny because some of my test folks who've seen the movie have all said, I've never seen a movie anything like this. And it works on a lot of levels.
What is the message? What's the message that people are walking away with from that one? The nuanced message.
It's forgiveness.
Really?
It's understanding people and understanding that, you know, how powerful forgiveness actually is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when we watch it, what are knowing that you draw from your own life's experiences? Is there a scene that we should look out for and be like, oh yeah, that was Michael's life right there?
Well, anything? I mean, you know, no, well, almost everything. but there's, really understanding if people. One of my philosophies is I love being wrong because every time I'm wrong, I learn something new.
Yeah.
Right? And that's benefited my life and the life of my children, my family, so much. And I just think we're on this planet together. We can learn from each other. I don't care who you are. You could have all these opposing views of who I am or whatever. And we could still learn from each other.
Yeah.
You know, even people that you go, well, like still, like when I talk about when I was 16 and people go, well, what connection do you have with that person? I just think about it. Like 2 days ago, my wife and I were having dinner with a really good friend and, you know, his wife. And I just think about it, how the visual probably looked to other people was like kind of confusing because, you know, my friend, he's got tattoos all over him and a swastika right here. Right?
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
and like, you know, he's a member of a biker gang in the past, but his tattoos show a past, you know, not for who he is now. Right. But I know visually people are like, what is that about? Right?
Yeah.
But it's like it's like I said, this was like the other night. But I've always been that person to where there's something beneath, you know, what we look, you know, the surface of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And before we, especially in this day and age, we just have to relegate somebody as that's that type of person, and that's all they are.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
It's such a waste of time. We spend so much time on this stupid hate stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you see some more and more reinforcement, especially in the social media and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Where, you know, all of the negativity has a direct correlation to money. You know, these clicks and everything else, that's making people richer by making your life look more cloudy.
Yeah.
So, hey, dare I say, I have some perspectives that might tend to unite more than divide.
Which is controversial in and of itself to really
mm-hmm.
to be able to see those, like, to, as you said, the clicks that the division is, there's money to be had in division, mm-hmm. right? And,
yeah.
and to consciously pursue uniting people, just like you did at your 16th birthday party,
mm-hmm.
right? To bring them all together. Like, that is a, We need more of that on a very real level, like not just a talking about it level, but an action level.
I really think the biggest money is in uniting.
Yeah.
Really, it is. It's just that.
Is it slower money, maybe? Takes longer. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's worth it.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. But,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, it's far more it's far more positive than negative. Mm-hmm. But it's just the positive is not celebrated as much.
Exactly,
which is unfortunate.
Well, but the fortunate thing is, and this brings us to one of your new projects, which is the studio that mm-hmm. you created. And as I'm listening to you talk, I'm thinking about someone who, because I don't think you're one of the few black actors to open up your own studio, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. have this space to tell the stories and to help create the stories that now, as this conversation is happening, that you mm-hmm. you believe in and feel like should be told. Is that part of what? I mean, I can't imagine how much work it would be to open your own studio on top of everything else that you're still doing. Really, what was the motivation for diving into this?
Well, it's the amount of joy that supersedes anything else. You mm-hmm. know, the amount of joy that it results from being able to do something and employ people and you know, teach kids that there's alternates to honor and, you know, and success and all of that. I mean, with my backers and what have you, I'm able to, you know, bring this industry into an environment that would have had nothing, that has very little in ways of, you know, proving that the future isn't anything but bleak. Mm-hmm. Like, man, there's like the truth of the matter is I'm a servant, you know, I'm an entertainer. You know, what is that? That's, you know, we serve others. Mm-hmm. And so that's really me operating at my highest, you know, my highest ability, you know?
Yeah,
so that's what it is. So yeah, it could be a daunting task, but it's a joyous one because I'm living true to who I am.
So you mentioned a couple of things here, employing people, being like the location. So tell me, I mean, I have the notes here. I know where it is, but mm-hmm. tell me where this studio is and why that matters, why it matters to you, why it matters to the industry as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I went back to my hometown, mm-hmm. And it just so happened. I wanted to shoot some films back in my hometown, and it was a couple of that have been kind of autobiographical in nature. And I said, well, you know, and I had two Oscar winners who wanted to produce with me, and they said, well, I've got a deal here at you know this studio and whatever. I said, hold on, I want to really try to amass a laundry list of why, you know, we should shoot in Connecticut. And when I went,
because your hometown is New Haven, Connecticut, right?
Yeah,
you were born in Brooklyn. You were born in Brooklyn, but
moved to Bridgeport, Connecticut. Went to school in New Haven.
Okay,
and so you know, so that mm-hmm. that whole thing. So, so you know, I wanted to, you know, have my my excuses to shoot there, and one thing led to another, and that a lot of the money people, the backers, started to put together that, hey, well, wait a minute. They started thinking about my background and as a school teacher, and I do a lot of motivational speaking ever since I left Connecticut. And that, so they started kind of connecting to, I guess, my narrative mm-hmm. and started encouraging me to think bigger. And you know, when I was looking at getting these movies done there, I realized that because I was getting buildings offered from, you know, political, you know, institutions and said, oh, if you're doing this, we will donate this. And I'm going, well, what's going to happen is that I'm going to end up, this is going to be a studio, basically, because,
yeah.
you know, with the sets and everything else, well, once I'm done with this, someone else can shoot films here. Mm-hmm. You know, we will have the infrastructure. And so everything just kept building and building. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it kind of was tantamount to a win-win situation for a lot of people. And well, with the tax credit in Connecticut as well, mm-hmm. Which we're working on even getting better. It's already started with a 30% mm-hmm. tax credit. And then there's something called in opportunity zones, which yep. is, you know, a big tax yep. break for those who invest. And so we started really coming up with a lot of win-win situations. And so it just kind of like took a life on its own. And here we are. And we're just building and building.
And well, and you mentioned which I love and I find so honorable. You mentioned it. It was kind of just as part of a sentence, but employing people and mm-hmm. and providing jobs in this hometown, and I think it's also opportunities for other people in theater, right? Because aren't there isn't there like a drama?
Well, there's a school called Yale.
Oh, just that little like, school yeah, called. Yeah, just that little, yeah, yeah. just that yeah, little school.
Yeah, yeah. There's it's not only make locks, but they're big institution. yeah. So I mean, we have connections with them, and we had some really exciting things with the theater, with academies around there, with Sacred Heart University, which yeah. is. Which I was the keynote speaker at the graduation this past mm-hmm. This past year. There's a lot of tremendous situations set up there.
Yeah,
and a lot of it excites me to perform at my top of my level. You know,
yeah.
which is really to serve. You know, that's what I'm here for. So that's like that's where I feel like I'm in my element.
I think it's interesting to hear this iteration of your career, even though it all kind of overlaps and it's not necessarily on a clear cut timeline, but it's very clear in the story that you've shared and the progression of this conversation, you know, your servant attitude. But not only, you know, it wasn't just acting. It was, you know, that's not enough in a greedy way, but I feel like I have more to give. And then it's kind of, and now here you are. And I love hearing you express this as your highest level and performing at your highest level, but this isn't even performance. This is business ownership, you know, like, but that, mm-hmm. that is, and I think people, in some of the conversations that I've had with other guests, I just finished talking with Carly Patterson, who won the Olympic gold medal when she was 16 years old, you know, and that you could see that is like the epitome. But then what is your next highest level? And to always be thinking and open to, okay, I'm doing this and I'm doing this well, but how can I serve and perform at my highest level, and what could that next level be? And I have a quote here that I believe is yours, or that you had when you were talking about the studio, that you see it as being a space dedicated to developing, producing, and distributing high-end content focused on positive heroes and powerful narratives set in the genres of action, drama, comedy. We now know Western, all of the genres. Yeah. But why, I mean, because you were one of the first, one of your roles is as a superhero, right?
Yeah, yeah, I played Spawn. It was the first African-American superhero.
Right, the first yeah. African-American superhero. Like that yeah. was, so why are the... Why are positive heroes and powerful, I would assume positive, again, narratives, why does that matter to you? Why do you think we need more positive heroes?
Well, we need more positivity anyway. I think the negative has really kind of you know, the lobbyists for negativity have been been flourishing. I've always felt like I've been a uniter of people. I've always, that's been a strength of mine. I understand folks, and I can understand how to, what serves many, you know? And that's really, it's not about a money thing. It's really about something I deeply believe in. I think I've been spared for a reason. It's really like unusual that I've made it through what I've made it through.
Yeah.
And so it's like my covenant to being true to who I am, and being that I really feel like I've been spared for this type of work, is way beyond Hollywood for me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's really about doing the right thing and with no distraction. No distraction whatsoever. And, hey, you know, I don't know what's going to stop me, you know? So it's you know, it's bigger than me. Mm-hmm. But I happen to be somebody who I think belongs in this particular position, and hopefully, you know, these things will continue when I'm gone.
I was not expecting such a source connected, like spiritual person to be sitting here. Like, I can feel your connection to your purpose, and your openness to being the vessel, the conduit for that. To anyone who, you've mentioned it a couple times, what you've been through, to have survived what you've been through, what would you say to someone who feels like they're in the middle of surviving the challenges of life? What would you say? Because to see you here on the other side of it, what would you say to that person?
I spoke to several children's groups, at-risk kids, not 5 days ago. And one of the things I told them is that, you know, it's like training. You are in a boot camp. You are going through something that's going to benefit you in the long run. But it's kind of like you're running a race with a 50-pound backpack on your back, right?
Yeah.
It feels unfair.
Right.
But because you have this albatross, you have this burden on you. But if you keep running, eventually that load lightens up. And when that load becomes 30 pounds, you're going to start running by people. Mm-hmm. And when you line up for that race, after you've shielded yourself of that 50 pounds, nobody's going to be able to catch up to you. You're going to blow right by everybody. But the way you do that is through education. You know, you get yourself educated and you learn, you use all those street skills and those people skills that had to be super advanced because that's what you had to, you know, live by. Mm-hmm. And you use those to gain whatever knowledge you need. Those people who had the creature comforts and two-parent households and things that came easy to them, they're not gonna relish success the same way you would. Mm-hmm. I'm the happiest person I know because of the struggles I've had early on. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like what Roberto Bernini said. He had the gift of poverty. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's many people as happy as me because of what I went through, right? And so that's the message I try to really let people know who are in the middle of the struggle, is that it gets better. Mm-hmm. And then that sweetness on top of the hill is sweeter than anything.
Right.
You know, so that's the thing. And it's just a matter of just being consistent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you take one step at a time and eventually you'll be there, you know, but you got to have a plan and you got to, you know, have discipline to stick to that plan.
Wow. I would imagine, I'm thinking about the kids that you spoke to and what did, could you see the reaction on their faces? Did they get the magnitude of what you were saying? Did they believe it?
Oh,
did they
yeah.
believe that things would get better?
Oh yeah. I've been, one of the greatest things that happened that I keep running into is that, I mean, every time I come back, I run into people. Mm. I can't tell you the amount of people who've told me some words of mine changed mm-hmm. their life. It happens quite often because I've been doing this since I was a school teacher. Recently, a couple of years ago, I was doing this movie in Texas, in Dallas, and I hadn't been to Dallas in hadn't been there in something like 11 or 12 years prior. And so 12 years ago, well, whenever I'm doing a movie anywhere, my days off, I check into the boys clubs, the, you know, the whatever community centers, I just go. Mm-hmm. I just thrust myself into the communities and find out where I can, you know, be of some help. And, you know, say, you know, I guess about 13 years ago, I was in Dallas and I went to an area called South Oak Cliff and there was a small community center there. And, you know, and I spoke with children at a community center, you know, about, you know, doing the motivational speaking stuff. And so I hadn't been there in quite some time. So when I was recently doing this movie, a buddy of mine who's a producer out there, he agreed to take me around. I said, well, we're going to, you know, and he's also a pastor. Mm. And so we ended up going to the new and improved version of this South Oak Cliff Community Center, which has now got a health, it's got weights, it's got, it's like top of the line. And so the young gentleman that was meeting us in the parking lot and was gonna take me through, and they organized some kids for me to meet, he seemed to have some kind of something up his sleeve. Like it felt like there was something he wasn't telling me, and I didn't know what it was till later. But I spoke to the kids, and when I was leaving, that's when this young guy said to me, "Listen, I didn't want to tell you anything, but," and he was one of the directors of the community center. He said, "When you were here last, I was one of those kids. What you said changed my life." And, you know, and then I'm like, wow, like, I'm glad you didn't tell me till now because I couldn't have kept it together.
Right.
Because what he had to tell me, you know, had us both in tears in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's nothing, I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I can win an Oscar and not feel
right
that significant. You know, mm-hmm. And because, you know, really it came down to because somebody planted a seed in me earlier, mm-hmm. you know, somebody came and spoke at my high school and it was the kind of the catalyst for me thinking a little differently. It just planted a seed and I changed. And I just, for some reason, knew that that guy got to where he was through education. And then my whole world changed. And so I know I've been spared for a certain reason and that's why I do it. You know, so, you know, and I'm able to, you know, with the things I'm doing now, I'll be able to affect more of that change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember who the speaker was?
No, I wish I could.
I know, right? So you could go back and tell the speaker. Yep.
I tried, but at the time, I mean, It was a Puerto Rican guy who came to my school, right? And he was saying, I earned my walk. He was a lawyer. Never knew his name, never paid attention. I was kind of clowning around, but that one little thing that he said stuck with me. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was going to stick with me.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't know that it was just going to be like, you know, I started doing my work and once I got out of high school and I actually won an award for self-improvement and a small scholarship, I didn't know the significance that man was going to play.
And then
I go to school and I say, I want to study law. Why? I don't know. It's because that guy did. You know?
Yes.
That was it. And I still didn't know the guy's name because I didn't know how significant it was going to be till way later.
Wow.
You know?
Well, I mean, it's, who knows? So if you're that guy, if you were at the high school, however many years ago, talking about getting, you know, earning your walk, then let us know so we can put you two back in touch. But it's likely not going to happen. However, what an incredible illustration of the impact you can have on someone's life on a random Tuesday afternoon,
right,
at a high school assembly. So, Michael, this has been such a joy. Where can people find you, or what should we look forward to next from you?
Well, I've got about four movies coming out.
Oh, just four.
Yeah. So there's a movie called Commando. And that's with myself and Mickey Rourke. And then there's, of course, Outlaw Johnny Black. And that's with a lot of stars in that movie. I just finished a movie called Come Out Fighting.
Okay.
And that's a World War II drama. And I'm sure there's a few others. Yeah, I just tend to like forget because I'm always just looking ahead.
Just look ahead.
But yeah, it'll come to me. But there's a few more.
Yeah. Well, we'll look for them. Are you on social media, Michael White?
Yes, I am. I'm at Official Michael Jai.
Okay.
On Instagram, and it's like hashtag Michael Jai White on I think everything else.
You got it.
Or the real Michael Jai White on YouTube.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, now you know where to find him. I can't wait to see what comes next, both on the big screen and out of your studio. It was so wonderful to have this time with you, to hear your stories, and really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you. You take care.
This has been Success Stories with Kendra Hall. If you like what you're hearing, hit subscribe, drop us a review, and tell your friends. If you'd like to hear more shows like this one, go to success.com/podcasts.